You know, it's been a while since I've done a podcast. I got back from sailing last summer, and I got involved in working on another project, and this website and this podcast has sort of fallen to the bottom of my priority list. Well, the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've actually got about 4 or 5 emails from people that have listened to my podcast and gone on my website, and I thought I ought to at least bring you up to date on how my summer sail went last year. And I'm not sure how long this will take, and I'm not sure how much time I'll devote to it today, but well, let's start out. I flew into Istanbul, and then directly from Istanbul, I caught a flight down to Bodrum and went to get on my boat and took the cover off of it. And I always leave a full cover on my boat when I leave the boat, and it's really done a great job of preserving the boat over the years. However, I've had the cover since I sailed across the Atlantic in 97. The same cover has been there, and the sun has taken its toll. And when I took the cover off, it pretty much fell apart. So I had to arrange to have a new cover made. Fortunately, my plans for the summer were to come back to the same marina or the same boatyard that I left from this year. So I planned on doing a circle and coming back and leaving my boat at the same place. So I arranged with the boatyard to give me a bid on making me a new full cover and having it ready for me when I came back. That gave them 2 months to get the cover done. The other big projects I had this year were I needed to replace the bowsprit and the boomkin. The bowsprit had started to get dry rot in it. And before I left the previous year, I had arranged with a company to build me a new bowsprit. Well, I had communicated with them. I'd sent emails over the winter, and I wasn't getting much response. So I was a little nervous on whether they'd actually have the bowsprit ready for me or not. Well, I show up at the shop that was going to build the bowsprit for me, and the person that had made the quote no longer worked there. The owner of the business knew nothing about the quote, and I was fortunate in the fact that I hadn't made a deposit on the bowsprit before leaving, so I didn't have to worry about getting my money back. But nonetheless, I did not feel really comfortable about taking the boat out without a very strong bowsprit. That's a critical part of the rigging, and I decided I wasn't going to go sailing until I had a new bowsprit built. So I wasn't sure what to do, and I was walking back to the boat, and I went by a wood shop, and I just walked into the wood shop, and there was a guy working there, and he didn't speak any English, and he was just a worker, so he called up his boss on the phone, and the boss came over and communicated very roughly. He spoke very little English. I spoke no Turkish. But I described what I needed to have done, and I took him over to my boat, and I showed him the bowsprit that I needed to have rebuilt. And he wanted to know what wood I wanted to make it out of. I wanted to make it out of a Douglas fir, which is what my original bowsprit was made out of. But, of course, Douglas fir is non-existent in Turkey. They have other types of soft wood, but he suggested I use a roka, which is a good wood, but it's a heavier wood. It's a more dense wood. But the advantage of it is that it's very resistant to rot. It's not quite as resistant as teak, but pretty close. It's a tropical hardwood. He convinced me to go that route, and so I had him start building me a new bowsprit. Now, it's a three-part or a four-part lamination to build the bowsprit, and I know you cannot rush glue to set. You've got to give glue time to set. And also I had to make me a new boomkin. Those are the two structural wooden pieces that come off my boat, and I knew that I needed to replace them. The boat's over 20 years old now, and it's time to replace those pieces. So knowing it would take about a week, we decided, well, I had my two friends with me, Roger and Kevin, and we said, well, there's not much we can do. Let's do what we can on the boat and then go travel. So we got the rest of the work done that we need to do on the boat. We painted the bottom. We waxed the top sides. We polished it up. And then decided to rent a car and went a-traveling. Did some land-based travel. Now, Roger, my friend, is a real photography buff and a real archaeology buff. So he had a couple places that he wanted to visit. So we started heading up toward, let me find the place here. I'm looking at Google Earth, and sometimes it's easier just for me to visualize where I'm talking about when I'm looking at Google Earth. We headed up towards Didyma, and along the way towards Didyma, we went by another ancient Greek ruin that is off the beaten path. And let me see if I can find the name of it. Hold on. I found it. It's Eremos, Eromos, and it's just sort of to the east of the town, sort of northeast of the town of Melis. We stopped there, and the way you find it, it's basically a very small sign along the road, and it's a dirt road, probably about a quarter of a mile to get up to the actual ruins. And there's an ancient temple and a theater, and we were the only ones there. It was really great to wander around. It took a lot of photographs there. And then we continued along the way and visited the temple of, I think it's Apollo in Didyma, spent some time there, and then continued on our way up to the Meander River Valley. We were heading up to the ancient site of Melis. And the Meander River Valley's just an absolutely beautiful, fertile, lush valley that has been built by the Meander River over the centuries. And we visited the Miletus, I think it's the Miletus ruins, on the first day, spent the afternoon wandering around the Miletus ruins. I found a hotel that was on the outskirts of the valley. Just driving along, we found a hotel there. It was a bargain for the three of us. We had a nice big room with three beds, and I think it was about about 90 euros a night for it. And the next morning, we went back to, well, I'm looking at Google Earth. It says Miletos, M-I-L-E-T-O-S. We went back to the ancient ruins of Miletos and spent another full day wandering around there. We just absolutely fell in love with it. One of those ruins that very few people visit. People go into, people get off the cruise ship in Kushadasi and go straight up to Ephesus. And Miletus is a little farther away, and it's not visited very much. And it's well worth the trip if you get a chance. While we were there, we had it to ourselves. The three of us went and visited most of the ruins, and we had the ruins to ourselves. A bus did come in while we were there. I'm probably going to try to post a few photographs of the ruins at Miletus. Then we visited, went back to the hotel, stayed another night, and then the next day we went and visited some more Greek ruins. And I had actually visited these before, and I thought it was Miletus, but I was mistaken. I thought I was going to Miletus years ago, and I ended up going to some other ruins, which were spectacular as well. And I'm trying to find the name of them. Here we go. Called Prini, P-R-I-E-N-E. And I, like I say, I had visited these before when I thought I was going to Miletus, and took a bus there from Kushadasi when my boat was in Kushadasi. Well, we spent one more night at the hotel there, so we had a total of three nights we spent at the hotel. And then we headed back to Bodrum because the bowsprit was supposed to be ready. Got back to Bodrum. The bowsprit was not quite ready. It was ready a day or two later. And then we put it back on the boat. And taking it on and putting it off the boat, taking it off and putting it on the boat was quite a chore because you've got a lot of rigging that you have to take apart and put back together again. We put it back together, put the stress back on it, and the laminations were coming apart. I went over and got Ali at the workshop and brought him over, and he showed it, and he hit his head, and he said, "Oh, I can't believe I did this. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Bring it back to the shop, and I'll fix it." And apparently what he had done, when he had put the wood through the planer, he would put a little oil on the planer bed, and, of course, some of the oil was absorbed by the wood, and it did not give it a good glue joint. So we took it back. He fixed it. Took another 3 or 4 days. And we made the best of our time while we were there and put it back on the boat. And it seemed to hold up pretty good the next time. So we headed south. We're starting to run out of time. Fortunately, I'd given Roger and Kevin about 14 days on the boat and would used up at least half of them on land. And we headed south. We visited the ancient site of Knudos and anchored there the first night. I've been there several times, and it's a nice anchorage, very protected anchorage, and it's an ancient ruined site as well. Been built up over the years. When I first visited it, there was nothing. You could just walk up on the ruins whenever you wanted to. Now they're all fenced in, and you have to pay to visit them. Turkey's getting plenty of tourism now, and they're starting to develop their natural attractions more. Then we headed down to Bosburn, one of my favorite little towns. Spent a little time in Bosburn. And what I like about Bosburn is they're still building gullets like they used to in the past. And I took a lot of photographs of a very large wooden gullet being built. I may post some of those photos as well. Then we left Bosburn. Well, actually, we spent a couple days in Bosburn, and we had met a individual who was a Norwegian who had just built a boat, and he was next to us in the boatyard, and he was very excited. He'd never really done any sailing before, and he launched his boat a couple days before we did, and we ran into him again in Bosburn, and he was having a little difficult time. He really wasn't sure how to control his boat. So I spent a day taking him out sailing, and it was interesting to me that he really hadn't done much sailing. He'd had power boats, but he really hadn't done any sailing to speak of. And so I took him out and spent a day teaching him how to sail. The first time the boat heeled over, he was very nervous, but gradually he got used to the feel of a boat heeling over when we're beating into the wind. And if I run into him again, I'll be interested to see how much he learned that summer. This summer was going to be a real learning curve for them. We left Bosburn, went up to a little anchorage, just a little, very protected little anchorage, just around the corner, and no real village to speak of. If you look at it on a map, it looks like a sort of a shoe coming in, and it's just around the corner on the peninsula there. Spent a night there. While we were there, there were a couple women living on a little boat, virtually living there all summer long, and they would come out to the boats. They were probably 20, I think 18 to 25 years old, somewhere in that range, and they were sisters, and they would come out and sell handicrafts to boats, and when they needed supplies, they would go on into the nearest town and pick up water and supplies, but they spent their day living on their boat, and when tour boats like our, well, charter boats would come in, not tour boats, because no tour boats went into this little inlet. They would come out and sell handicrafts to them. Kevin bought some of their handicrafts, more just as a way of showing support for the girls than anything else. It gave him a memory of the area, but I was thinking as I was watching these girls, you know, no TV, no phone. They did have phones. I take that back. They actually did have phones. But they spent their day reading and studying, and they caught their food. They caught fish, and they ate their fish. I was watching them fish, and they were just catching small fish, almost like sardines. But they spent their summer there. Later on, we went back to Bosburn, and I was talking to a man that ran a little restaurant there, and he was from the same village as these girls were from, and he said they did really good. They made quite a bit of money, relatively, to other people in the village, and they did quite well in the summer. Roger and Kevin left me in Bosburn, and then I sailed on over to Simi to clear into Greece. Now, in the past, I've talked about what a headache it is to clear into Greece and how easy it was to clear into Turkey. Well, I'm changing my opinion this year. For me to clear out of Turkey, I had to hire an agent to clear me out, and it took all day long to clear out of Turkey, and I had to pay, I think I had to pay 50 euros for the agent to clear me out. So then I sailed on over to Simi by myself, and when I came in to Simi, I asked the port police, I said, where do I go to clear in? And he told me where to go. First of all, I went to the port police, or I guess the passport police. They stamped my passport. Then I went to customs, and they filled out a big, long form, and I paid some money at customs, and then I went around to the port police and paid for my moorage for the day, and that was it. It was pretty simple, straightforward. So I am changing my opinion on Greek bureaucracy, at least for Simi. Simi seemed to be very easy to clear into. Met an American that had bought a house in Simi. He came by the boat, said hello to me. He said he'd watched me sail in, and he was from the East Coast. And I was looking at the weather forecast, and the weather forecast for the coming week was going to be some very, very strong winds later on in the week. So I spent a couple nights in Simi, and then I sailed around the island to another little anchorage, which is a very well-protected anchorage called Panormitus. And again, I'm sailing by myself at this point in time. And I'd talked to some other sailors in Simi, and they said, well, if we're having a big storm coming, we need to find a very good harbor to be anchored in. So he said, and this was new to me because my pilot did not show this, he said he was heading off to Nisyros. This island is spelled N-I-S-Y-R-O-S, and I'm looking at Google Earth while I'm talking. And I went up to the little anchorage in Pali, P-A-L-I. They have expanded that marina to about double, and the pilot doesn't show this, and it's an all-around marina. I got up there early because I knew it would fill up when this storm hit, and the wind was going to be coming from the south. There were strong southerlies. So I got up there, and I got nice and situated, backed in. Spent, I think, 3 days there altogether, 3 days waiting for the storm to come, and it hit, and the marina, the harbor was jam-packed when this storm hit, and there were several boats that came in trying to find a spot. There was no room for them by the time it had hit. Several nice little restaurants along the way. I rented a car and drove around the island. There's a big, hot caldera right in the middle of the island. It seems to be a tourist location to be visited. A lot of sulfur and hot vents that are coming out of it, similar to what you might see in some areas of Yellowstone, but on a much smaller scale. And all in all, I enjoyed the island. It's not a very often visited island. Got some nice photographs of the island and where I visited. The main town on this island is Mandrake. And the harbor in Mandrake is nowhere near as protected as the one I was at in Pali. So I was glad I didn't head over to the main harbor there. The storm came the next day. I decided it was time to go sailing again. I was tired of being in port. And so I thought I was going to head down to Tilos. I'd never visited Tilos before. And so I left early in the morning and started sailing. And gradually wind started building from the north, pretty much directly from the north. I was on a nice downwind run and just having a delightful time. And I pulled into Tilos, and I was the only boat there. Got a nice nice anchorage, but I got there fairly early in the afternoon. And the town on Tilos is Livida, L-I-V-A-D-A. And it's not a very big harbor. I did get a nice spot on the inside of the quay. I was told that's not quay, which is the way I pronounce it, but the quay or the mole. Wandered around the town, but I was getting antsy. The winds were too nice. I didn't want to waste a good sailing day. So I went back to the boat, left, got some supplies, and headed on down south. Now, my next crew I was going to be picking up in Karpathos, so I still had quite a ways to get before I got to Karpathos. So I needed to start working my way south. So I headed down to the little island of Alima, A-L-I-M-I-A. And there's a couple little, there's a couple bays in there. There's one big bay with two legs in it, and both of them have very good protection, but there's no town of any sort there. There's a couple fishermen that live on their boats, but other than that, there's nothing there except some old World War II barracks that the Italians lived in. And I'd heard about these barracks and some of the drawings that were on the wall in these barracks. So the next day after I spent the night there, I went down and anchored off these barracks and went in and took some photographs and some interesting World War II art. And I don't know, maybe you'd call it graffiti, but it was fairly well done of a lonely soldier's posting there. After that, I sailed on over to the town of Kalki on the island of Kalki, C-H-A-L-K-I. And this was just a delightful town. It's one of those places that does not allow cars and motorcycles or motor scooters. The protection in the harbor is not very good for sailors. But as long as it's calm weather, it's okay. So I stayed there a couple nights, and then the second night, a big flotilla that had sailed down from Rhodes came in and filled up the marina. In the middle of the night, the wind started blowing very strong from the south, and it's not a very protected harbor. We started getting bounced around. Everybody left. So I left and headed back to Alima again. And the winds were very, very strong out of the south, extremely strong out of the south. So I had dropped my anchor and in the south part of this big bay, and I'd taken a line ashore, put the dinghy in the water, put the motor on, taken a line ashore. I got nicely situated. I was feeling pretty cocky. I was feeling pretty darn comfortable. Then I took a second line ashore. So I had two lines ashore, and the winds were projected to come very strong from the south for the next 24 hours. So I'm sitting there very close to shore, very little fetch in the water. And suddenly, out of nowhere, the wind shifted 180 degrees and screamed out of the north, instantly screamed out of the north. Picked my dinghy up, slammed it against my backstay, turned it over, dumped it in the water, and I'm pretty close to shore, and I'm worried about dragging anchor now. It was fairly flat water, but I'm worried about dragging anchor, and I'm getting stretched out on my anchor, getting closer and closer to shore. Start my engine motor against the wind, and I'd made a mistake in when I put out my first line. I ran through the hawse pipe and to the shore. Then I went and found the bitter end on this very long stern line that I've got and ran it out the other hawse pipe and ran it to shore. So I had two lines out, but the problem was I couldn't undo one end and let it run out. I had to cut the line. So I had to cut the line, pull up my anchor. I went out into the bay and re-anchored. And there were four other boats tied up to a big buoy in the middle of this protected water, this harbor. It was a big ship buoy that they had actually tied to, and there were three boats tied to that that were from the flotilla fleet or the racing fleet that had come down from Rhodes the previous day. And they asked if they could help me. Of course, they were already stressed out pretty much on the lines that they were at. So no, I went up and anchored. This was in the middle of the day, so fortunately I could see what was going on and just watched my anchor, and my anchor held. About an hour later, the wind died, just pretty much died, and didn't die totally, but it dropped down to a very moderate breeze. And the three boats that were tied up to the mooring buoy let go and headed back to Rhodes. And I went back and tied up on the mooring buoy that they were tied up to and put my dinghy in the water. I didn't know what to do about the motor because it had been dunked in salt water, turned upside down and dunked in salt water. So what I did do is I took the top off and just poured a lot of fresh water over it to try to get as much salt out as I could. But I did not try to start it. So I took the motor off, mounted it back on its mounting bracket, and put the oars on and just rowed back and retrieved my line that I had cut and spent the rest of the day splicing this long line back together again. Next morning I was up and early and I sailed down to Karpathos. Quite a long sail, and it was a great downwind run. The winds were fairly strong. It was a fairly nice downwind run all the way down to Karpathos, and I picked up my crew in Karpathos. And, I've gone on long enough, and I've got other things to do today, and I'll try to finish up the summer sail. We've got a lot more to talk about before we go. But I'll just talk about what happened to Karpathos, which I thought was fairly humorous. We stayed in Karpathos a couple days. We wanted to explore the island. So we rented a car and drove around the island and went up and visited the village called Olympus, which is known for being a traditional village. The people are wearing traditional dress. They sell handicrafts. They make their own macaroni. A delightful village way up on the side of the hill. And yeah, it was worth taking the trip. As we're walking up this little path, the women are all dressed in traditional clothes. And they're speaking to us in broken English, like, oh, we don't really understand English, but we'll try to communicate. And a phone call came in, and the lady went and grabbed and said, "Hi, how are you doing?" And it was a phone call from somebody in Baltimore, so they were busted. They spoke excellent English. The entire village seems to have family and friends in Baltimore, Maryland, and they go work there for a while and then come back to Olympus. But they all spoke English, but they didn't want to let on because it was easier to sell their handicrafts if you didn't know that they spoke English. Got back to the boat and headed on to Kassos. Now, Kassos is one of the islands I wanted to visit this summer. This is the reason I was heading south. Kassos is this tiny little island just off to the southwest of Karpathos. And the reason I wanted to visit Kassos is because this is one of those shipping islands. This is one of those islands where a lot of very, very wealthy shipping families come from. And the other one that I've talked about in the past has been Ienousis Island, just off the coast of Chios. So I wanted to visit Kassos. I'd met the Elias Koulikoundis, whose family is from this island and is very active in the shipping industry even today. And in fact, their family were the first Greek shipping family that moved from sail to steam way back in the 1800s. So I was interested to see how they honored their shipping heritage on Kassos, because they definitely honored it in Ienousis. And I was disappointed. There was only one statue of a Greek shipping captain. People really didn't talk about their heritage. The island was not that interesting. So I was a little disappointed. It's a very, very barren island, just a brown island, and there's not much to it. No real anchorages except for in the town of Free on the north end of the island. And then there's another anchorage, sort of a fair weather anchorage on the south end of the island, which we did sail around to and went swimming before heading over to Crete. But that's going to finish it up today. We'll talk about Crete and the rest of the summer in the next podcast. But I just wanted to get something out because it's been so long. Thanks for listening, and I do appreciate those emails. Talk to you later. Bye.